I don't know if you're accustomed to writing in your Bible, underlining or circling particular words, but I love doing that. If you could see my Bible here this morning, there's stuff written all around the text as I've been studying it for a few weeks, just rich parts of this chapter. But when I got to verse 31, Isaiah 40, 31, I circled a word, and it's the word wait. And it seems as though it's a hinge in the truth of this passage, because quite frankly, all of us want strength that comes from God. All of us want power that comes from on high, but it hinges, it seems like, on this word wait. And so what I'd like to focus on this morning is this idea of waiting on the Lord. Now, when we think of waiting, perhaps the first thing that comes to mind is waiting in traffic on Friday at 5:15 on I-15 when you're trying to get home from work. There you are and you're stuck. I mean, have you been stuck in traffic lately? And you just put it in park. You're not moving anywhere. Just put it in park. Save some gas. But there you are. You're tapping the steering wheel. You're changing the channels on your radio. You're trying to find something to do. Maybe you're even looking on your smartphone, which you shouldn't be doing. But you're doing something while you wait. Maybe that's what you think of, traffic jams, waiting. Or maybe you think of Walmart, you know, the Walmart line. I'm not brave enough to go to Walmart anymore. It's just takes a lot of courage to get there. But you get to Walmart and you look for the smallest line, and it's this race, you know. It's a funnel of people when you get to the checkout lines. Do you ever notice that? People coming from this way and that way, and you're pushing your cart, and you try to go a little faster than that old lady because you're going to get in, you know. You get there, and you get in line, and you think you found the shortest one, and this woman in front of you has shoes that she's buying, and you know they always do now. They open the box of shoes, and they check to make sure both sizes are correct, and here you picked the line where the lady had two different size shoes in the box, and you know that as soon as that cashier picks up the phone to call the department, the shoe department, to come, and you know you're stuck. So you look behind you for an escape route, but you're boxed in, and there you sit. You know you're doomed to wait. Waiting in traffic, waiting at Walmart, maybe waiting at the post office. I don't know if you've been to the post office recently. We send emails these days and not regular letters, but Christmas time gets us there. And there you are at the post office, and there's an elderly gentleman who has 104. Yes. You know it's 104. He has 104 Christmas cards to send out. And you know it's 104 because he's standing there at the window with each stamp putting them on while you're waiting in line. You're like, two, three. You're like, would you please move along, sir? But 104, and there you stand in line at the post office just waiting. Traffic, Walmart, post office. You wait in line. You wait for things to get moving. You can honk and you can huff. And you can look at your watch 16 more times, but it just doesn't change the fact that you have to wait. Now, many times, that's our first thought when it comes to waiting. We're waiting for something to get moving. We're waiting for someone to move along. We're waiting for traffic to get going. We're waiting. But I want to suggest to you that that is not what waiting means in this text. You see, in this text, waiting is less about time and more about trust. And so when we get to verse number 31, and it says, but they who wait for the Lord, it's not necessarily talking about people looking at their watch. It's talking about people who are trusting in God. So when we talk about waiting here, maybe a better analogy would be thinking about one of those indoor rock climbing places. There's one just off I-15 that was recently built. I don't know if you've seen it. It's called the Front Climbing Club. Has anyone seen that big black building, kind of cool looking? It's down off of I-15. And it's one of these kind of elite climbing clubs. It's got all these indoor walls and all that. And I was driving by there the other day, and I was remembering the last time I did an indoor climbing wall. You say, Lucas, it looks like it's been a while. And yes, you're absolutely right. It's been a while. It was when I lived down in Texas, and my older brother was coming for a visit. And so I tried to plan some things that would be, you know, fun for us to do. And one of the things I found was there was this grain elevator that they had transformed into an indoor climbing wall. And so it was a 100-foot wall inside this grain elevator, and I decided I'll take my older brother there. And you know what's so funny about siblings is you can be grown up, be married, live in different states, but when you get back together, you know how it is. It's like sibling rivalry, just like you were teenagers again. Like it just bubbles up, you know? And so I'm there with my older brother, Caleb, and we're smack talking and telling him I'm going to climb higher than he can and do it better than, you know, you can. He's getting all worked up, you know? I love seeing him worked up like that, you know? And I get him all, you know? And so he tries and he falls like early. And he's not going to give up, though, so he's going to try again. And if any of you have been rock climbing or indoor climbing, you know that, listen, when you start falling like that, you're just getting more and more tired, and it's less and less likely you're going to make it to the top. And he was so frustrated because he did not want me to show him up, right? And I'm mocking him the whole time. I mean, encouraging him the whole time. Oh, you can go another foot, buddy. You know, like, it was so much fun. It was so much fun. And then it was my turn, and I was not going to let him beat me. And so I climbed like a cat. I mean, I'm not trying to brag. I'm just telling you the truth. It's just like I was going to beat him. And I made it to the top. I made it to the top of this 100. I mean, I was shocked. I tried not to look down. I was terrified. And I was exhausted. If you've done any climbing, you realize your fingers at the end, you can barely like move your fingers. And your legs are so tired, they're like shaking as you're there, you know? And so at this particular climbing wall, there was a Sharpie marker at the top. If you made it to the top, you grabbed that Sharpie marker and you wrote your name. And so I'm mocking my brother as I write my name. Oh, it says Lucas here, not Caleb. You know, I'm like writing it, mocking him. But I mean, in all truth, I could barely even hold the Sharpie marker. I was so tired and so weary by the time I got to the top. Now, I had trusted in my hands and my feet the whole climb. Try to use your legs. Try not to use your... I mean, I'm doing this whole thing. I get to the top, but I had no strength left. I mean, for me to descend down the same way I came up was utterly impossible because I was totally weary. And so I was going to have to make a decision at the top. I was going to have to trust the rope. Do you know what it's like to be 100 feet in the air and here you are and you're going to kind of belay down and you're going to lean back off of that wall into that rope? I'm just telling you, it was a terrifying thing for me. Terrifying. What if the rope doesn't hold? What if this really isn't braided nylon? I mean, what if my brother's so mad he just lets go? I mean, you know, like there's all these what ifs. But in that moment, I was so weary. And so tired, I couldn't trust my hands and feet anymore, and I had to trust the rope. Now listen, I had to put my weight on the rope, W-E-I-G-H-T. But when I put my weight on the rope, do you know what I was actually doing? I was waiting on the rope. I was trusting in the rope. I was leaning into it. I was depending on it. And that's what this word means. It's not about time. It's about trust. It's leaning into God as though he's that rope. It's getting to the end of yourself where I've got no more strength and I'm so weary and I'm so faint. Like some of you this morning, I mean, you made it here, you braved the weather, but the truth of the matter is you are so burdened down and so tired, you just can't hang on much longer. There's things that are just heavy about relationships or heavy about finances or heavy about changes in life or heavy about sin struggles or you're just weary. And this verse is calling you to wait on the Lord, to lean into him. You're so deeply discouraged or you're so wreaked by fear. You don't know what to do anymore. And this verse just calls out to us and it says, wait on the Lord. I know you're spent. I know your strength is gone. I know you're tired. I know you're weary. Like 7 times in this little section, it talks about weariness or faintness. 7 times. That's how we are. And in those situations, what we need to do is we need to wait on the Lord, depend on him, trust in him. Now, if you know the context of Isaiah chapter 40, you realize how important this was for the people of Judah. This passage was prophetically written for the people of Judah in exile, when they were taken captive by Babylon, when they had lost all of their homes and all of their land and their temple and their people, and they were taken captive to a strange place. They had nothing left. They had nowhere to go. Lots of hopelessness and lots of despair, lots of pain, lots of tiredness. Just weary people. And he looks at these weary people and says, when life is difficult, when you feel drained, when you're hurting, you need to wait on the Lord. And so this morning, weary friend, when I ask that you would wait on the Lord, maybe you have a difficult task or an impossible tomorrow. And what you need to do today is wait on the Lord. Well, I think Isaiah knows that we're fickle people. We don't always wait on the Lord. And we may not wait on the Lord as our first response, actually. We bounce around. We try other things. It may not be our default to go to God. And so in this passage, he identifies the folly of waiting on anything or anyone other than God. And here's kind of what he does. It's kind of like he answers this question. Well, why should I wait on the Lord? And he puts it like this. Well, because, friend, if you wait on anything else or on anyone else, it's purely ridiculous. Like he'll use sarcasm and he'll kind of demean certain things, but he's really doing this all the way through Isaiah 40. He's doing this to point you back to God. Like, friend, don't wait on anything else. Don't wait on anyone else. Wait on God. Lean on him. Because that's the only place where you'll find the strength you need. So I think he identifies some places where we shouldn't wait. So when you're weary, here's the first thing I want to show you from this text. When you're weary, when you're worn down, when you're weighted by life, don't wait on mankind. That means yourself or other people. Don't wait on mankind. Why? Well, because man is transient. And that's kind of the point that he's going to make in the text. He's going to say, listen, when you're burdened down, when you're weighed down, don't run to other people and don't depend on yourself, because mankind at large is just transient. They're only here for a little bit. They pass away. And the place where you see that is in verses 6 through 8. So if you look in the text, Isaiah chapter 40, verse number 6, it says this. A voice says, cry. And I said, what shall I cry? Well, here it is. All flesh is grass, and all its beauty is like the flower of the field. The grass withers, the flower fades when the breath of the Lord blows on it. Surely the people are grass. The grass withers, the flower fades. You're like, I thought he just said that. He did. He's saying it again. Like, get this point. The grass withers, the flower fades, but the word of our God will stand forever. What is he talking about here? Well, he's using grass and flowers, and he's using them as emblems of things that are just frail and transient, things that fade and wither. Now, my wife hit a decade, another one of those big decade markers, and I'm not going to tell you which one. I'm not allowed to. She hit a decade marker this past Monday was her birthday, so I wanted to ease her into it. It's a little bit of a painful one, you know, ease her into it. And so a couple days before, I decided, you know, I was heading home from work. I'm just going to buy her some flowers. Now, some of you guys, I know you do that every week. I'm just not as good as you. And so I decided this was a little out of order. I'm going to buy her some flowers. So on my way home from work, I call a florist. Well, I ask Siri, what's the closest florist? Siri tells me. I call them. They prepare these flowers. I buy them. It costs an arm and a leg for flowers these days. Didn't tell her that. Bought these flowers, brought them home. Set them in the middle of the table. Beautiful, beautiful flowers for 2 days, for 2 days. I think that's why I don't like buying flowers, right? I mean, like, oh, they look really great. And then 2 days later, you have these limp, dead, shriveled up things that you paid, like, a lot of money for. You want to fan them back. You want to give them fresh water, stand them up somehow, staple them together so they're, give me a couple more days, you think, to these flowers. But the flowers are so transient, and they're so frail that even a change in temperature can ruin these things. And this is what Isaiah is saying to you. Listen, you're having a hard time in life. You're going through a struggle or a trial or difficulty. Why are you running to people? Or why are you depending on yourself? Don't you realize that mankind is just like those flowers? They're frail. They're fragile. They're transient. That's not where you're going to find your help. And I love the end of verse 8. Did you catch that? Listen, humanity is like grass and flowers. They wither and fade. But God, do you see that? But the word of our God stands forever. Like in contrast to all this, look to God. So if you're in the midst of the pressures of life or pains of certain circumstances, don't turn to the resources of men. Here's how it kind of comes in our life. This is what we think to ourselves. I've got a problem. I've got an issue. I've got a struggle. I'm going to buy my way out of this problem. I'm going to think my way out of this crisis. I'm going to exercise and diet a bit more to solve this. I'm going to muscle my way through it. I'm going to elect the right leader who will make things right. I'm going to get the best trainer. I'm going to invest in the right funds. And the list goes on and on. But do you see the problem with all of those? At the root of each one of those endeavors to solve your problems is man. And he says, man is transient. That's not where you find your help. Mankind is not the answer to your pain or the solutions to your problems. God is. And I love how he kind of addresses some of our attitude problem when it comes to difficulties in life, because some of us in here, we've muscled our way through a lot of things. We just try a little harder. We spend a little more time. We think about it a little more deeply, and we're going to figure it out. But that's not the right way to go through life. He says, actually, that's like a teenage way to go through life. You know what teenagers are like? That's what it says. Look in the text right at the end of the chapter. He says, even the youths, what do you think when you think youth group? Teenagers. Even the youths faint and grow weary. Even young men fall exhausted. You know, I mean, he's kind of characterizing teens here, and I don't mean to be insulting to any teenagers, because we were all teenagers, and we were some of us the same way, right? But I mean, the teen mindset is, listen, I got it. I can do it. Mom, you know, like I, you know, some of you, you're in college here, and mom still calls, and you're like, okay, thanks, mom. I've got it. You know, I can do this. Or you're in a youth group and your mom tells you, hey, listen, it's cold outside. Put a stocking cap on. You think, mom, I can handle it. It's okay. And you walk outside. And like 2 hours later, the kid comes in and his ears are like these flashing stoplights. I mean, they're about to fall right off their head. And he's like, man, my ears are, and mom just looks, you know. But he could figure it out, right? Or the 17-year-old has his first car and it's not starting. It's stuck in the driveway. And so he says, dad, I'm going to save some money and fix it myself. Oh, you are. Yeah, I got this, Dad. And so Dad says, well, you may want to go down to the library and get the manual for that so you know what you're doing. Dad, I've got this. And so 4 hours later, he comes back in and he's completely exhausted and there's four boxes of car parts that he has no idea what to do with, you know. He says, Dad, you know, no, you don't have it. No, you can't handle it. You can't get it all figured out. You can't do it all on your own. But that's how youths think. He says, that's how we think. He says, when you hit these problems in life, mankind is not the answer. Muscling your way through, figuring it out on your own, try a little harder, you can do it. That's not the right way. Because you'll find yourself growing weary and faint in the end. You'll find that the best resources of man are like grass and flowers. They fade away. It's not the way to deal with problems. It's interesting in verse 24, he even takes the best examples of mankind, the strongest of people, the leaders of humanity in verse 24. He says, scarcely are they planted, scarcely sown, scarcely has their stem taken root in the earth. He blows on them and they wither. And the tempest carries them off like stubble. Even the strongest, the rulers, that's verse 23, you see, the rulers of the earth, they think, oh, I'm rooted, I'm grounded, I'm strong, I can do this. No, you can't. You just blow away like chaff. Friends, we have to come to this conclusion that we're a little bit more like powdered sugar on top of a pound cake than a rooted oak tree when it comes to the winds of trials in life. We just blow away. We fade and we wither. Our resources are not found within. They're found from him. And so the first thing that Isaiah wants to say is, listen, when you're weary, don't wait on men. They're transient. But then he goes on in the text and he says this, number two, when you're weary, don't wait on idols, because idols are impotent. Means they don't have power. So men are transient, idols are impotent, and you see that in verse number 18. He starts to address the problem of idolatry. Like literally, Judah would have this temptation, and in their history, they did this many times. They turned to idols when they were in trouble. Look at verse 18, Isaiah 40, 18. To whom then will you liken God? Or what likeness compare with him? I think it's interesting. He's going to start talking about idolatry by highlighting the character of God. He's going to say this, listen, God is unique. He doesn't fit our categories. He can't be controlled. He refuses to be likened to anyone else. There's no analogy that can adequately explain our God. He's incomparable. Who will you liken God, or to what likeness will you compare him? An idol? Like, for real? He's like, really? An idol? You're gonna try to compare the true and living, the unique and almighty, the everlasting God? You're going to try to compare him to an idol? He says, a craftsman. And you can almost see Isaiah's smirk when he says this. Okay, let me see if I get this straight. This is how he is. Let me see if I understand you right. So a craftsman casts it, and a goldsmith overlays it with gold and casts it for silver chains. And he who's too impoverished for an offering chooses wood that will not rot. And he seeks out a skillful craftsman to set up an idol that will not move. So let me see if I get this straight. So if you have a lot of money, then you get a sculpture to kind of form a little figurine, right? Oh, okay. Or if you're a little poorer, you have to go out to your backyard and find a piece of wood and take your little jackknife, your Swiss Army knife, and carve a little figurine out of that piece of wood. And then that's your God. Let me see if I got that straight. You're telling me that the Almighty, the everlasting God, the creator of all things, can be compared to the little figurine? It doesn't matter if you pour over gold on top of it. That changes nothing. It's a figurine. It's ridiculous to think that an idol can be your deliverer, that somehow you can carve a statue or cast a molten image and think that the pathetic work of your hands can adequately save your soul. The problem that we have is that we don't like to see ourselves as idolaters. I mean, this part of the message is the part that we're like, oh, that's cool. I don't have any figurines or statues that I bow down to or pray to. I think I'm good. We don't like to see ourselves as idolaters. We don't maybe have a grove in our backyard. Perhaps we haven't hired some sort of sculptor to make us a figurine that we pray to. But the fact of the matter is, we still struggle with idolatry. It's interesting to me, the last verse, you get right down to the end of 1 John. He says, little children. This is the end of 1 John. Little children, keep yourselves from idols. Do we struggle with idolatry? Yes. Yes, we do. This is what's interesting to me about this text. The people are concerned more about whether their idol is going to fall over than they are about what their idol can provide for them. And so let me show you where that is. It has to do with these silver chains. It says, this is verse 19, the goldsmith overlays it with gold and casts for it silver chains. You say, well, what are these chains for? Well, historically, they would have these figurines, these carved idols, and then they would take little chains to kind of fasten them down. Because the last thing you want is this carved image to fall over and break. You can almost imagine it, right? These kids are running through the tent. Kids, stop running through the tent. You're going to knock over our God. Kids, would you knock off the rough housing? You're going to break our God. I mean, can you hear that? It's like, would you listen to yourself? You're so worried that your God is going to fall over. How is your God going to deliver? And yet, how many people have made money their God and they've worried all this last week about how their God's going to fall over with the stock market? How is your God going to save you? Do you see, we are people who struggle with idolatry. Maybe we don't have gold statues, but sex is our idol, money is our idol, Alcohol is our idol. Work is our idol. Approval is our idol. Drugs are our idol. Education is our idol. We run to these things when we're struggling with life. We try to find coping or mechanisms or distractions or things that will somehow balm our souls. When you don't know what to do with life, when you're worn down and weary, you run to your idol for deliverance. So you sleep with someone. You get plastered at a party. You smoke a little bit of weed. You do a little more overtime, you study a little harder, or you go shopping. And in each one of those moves, you bow down to your idol. You see, we do struggle with idolatry. And here Isaiah calls to us, and he says, dethrone your idol and rediscover your God. Because you should not wait on men. You should not wait on idols. Why? Well, because men are transient and idols are impotent. They can't help you. Wait on the Lord. There's one more thing I want to show you here, because he's saying, don't wait on this, don't wait on this. So don't wait on men, they're transient. Don't wait on idols, they're impotent. He has one more thing that I want to highlight. I think it's interesting. So the third thing he says is, when you're weary, don't wait on nature. Don't wait on nature. And here's why. Because nature is contingent. It's dependent. It's a derivative. Nature is contingent. So don't trust in, don't depend on, don't wait on nature, because nature is contingent. Let me show you where that's shown, where that's seen in our text here this morning. It's in verse number 26. Verse 26 says, lift up your eyes on high. So pretend you're on a dark night. You're away from the city. You're somewhere up on top of one of these resort mountains and all the lights are out. Lift up your eyes on high. What do you see? Well, you're above the inversion, so you can actually see something up there. And you look up, and there's this black velvet sky that's speckled with diamond stars. I mean, millions and millions, too many to count. It's amazing. You look up at these things, and you're almost in awe of such beauty. He says in verse 26, look up. Lift your eyes on high and see. And then he says this, who created those stars? Who created these? Answer, God. He who brings out their hosts by number, calling them all by name, by the greatness of his might, and because he is strong in power, not one is missing. What's interesting about this text is that here's Judah. They've been taken captive by Babylon. They're weary, they're faint, they're worn. And he says this, when you're weary, don't wait on nature, because nature is contingent. And why did that have such an important piece in the lives of the Judeans? Well, it's because there they are in Babylon, and the Babylonians, do you know what they did? They were astrologers. They looked to the stars. They wanted to find wisdom from the stars, protection from the stars, guidance from the stars. The Babylonians were astrologers. And so here they are, they're in Babylon. They may have a tendency to adopt the Babylonian ways and trust in nature. And he says, no, look at the stars and remember who made them. He didn't just make them, but it's as though he commands them. He holds them. He knows their name. This is God. That's who you need to stand in awe of. The stars are created, but you need to know that the everlasting God is the creator. Don't stand in awe of an invention. Look at the inventor. Don't depend on a derivative. Go to the source. The whole point of this section is that nature is contingent on its maker. I mean, do you realize, this is Colossians chapter 1, that by him all things were created in heaven and on earth, visible, invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him, all things hold together. Hebrews chapter 1 says this, he created the world. He upholds the universe by the word of his power. Why are you looking to the universe when you should be looking to the one who holds the universe together? Do you see, nature is contingent upon its creator. Don't look to nature to solve your problems. When you're weary, don't go there. Now, how does this apply to us? Well, listen, friends, the answers for life are not found in nature. So here you're struggling. You've got a problem. The answers for life are not found by going to Sedona and sitting on a rock. That's not where you're going to find your answers. Balance in life is not going to be found by wearing a magnet on your wrist. Strength for life is not going to be found in gluten-free, caveman, Atkins, Shackley, vegan, paleo, vegetarian, pescatarian, Presbyterian. I mean, any of those. That's not where you're going to find it. In nature. Oneness in life is not going to be found by taking a long hike. We live in Utah, and people, I mean, they love the outdoors. I do too. But that's not where the answers in life are. Answers in life are not found in rocks or magnets or food or stars or trees or any other created thing, because they're not the creator. Nature's not God. Nature is dependent, reliant, and subject to God. And so in this text, here's what Isaiah is saying. He's saying, listen, I know that you're weary and you're pained and you're burdened and you're having a hard time. I know that. But when you're weary, when that's what has to, when that's what's going on in your life, when you're feeling overcome or faint or overwhelmed, when you're weary, don't look to nature. Don't look to men. Don't look to idols. Instead, look to God. And so the passage kind of then culminates in where we started in these verses 27 through 31. When you're weary, don't wait on man, don't wait on idols, don't wait on nature. Instead, wait on God. And I like to put it this way because this is stuck in my head. When you're in pain, when you're weary, your pain needs to push you to God. Pain always pushes us somewhere. It always pushes us somewhere. The question we need to wrestle with this morning is, are we allowing our pain to push us to God? See, some people were running to other men or to themselves. Some people were running to nature. Some people were running to idols. He says, no, your weariness, your pain needs to push you to God. So when you're weary, wait on the Lord. That's what this passage is saying. Have you not known, verse 28? Have you not heard, verse 28? The Lord is the everlasting God. He's the creator of the ends of the earth. He does not faint or grow weary. His understanding is unsearchable. He gives power to the faint. And to him who has no might, he increases strength. Even the youth shall faint and be weary. Young men shall fall exhausted. But they who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They'll run and not grow weary. They'll walk and not faint. You may feel overwhelmed. You may feel overcome by life's pressures. But these things need to push you to God. You may feel like you can't measure up to the demands or the trials that are in your life. But the good news this morning is you don't have to. You're not doomed to your potential because you can rely on God. I mean, the point of this passage is that we would understand this good news. He actually calls it that in verse number 9. In verse number 9 of our text, he says, listen, this is great news. Go up to a high mountain, O Zion, and herald good news. Lift up your voice with strength, O Jerusalem, herald of good news. Lift it up. Fear not. Say to the cities of Judah, behold your God. Stop looking to man. Stop looking to nature. Stop looking to idols. Behold your God. Because those who wait upon the Lord find strength. Why do we find strength from God? I mean, how is he doing this? Well, when we come to this conclusion, when we come to the conclusion that we're not enough, that we're not strong, that we can't do it, when we come to that conclusion, then finally we're ready to receive this truth. God is enough. He is strong, and he can do it. We're ready to receive that good news. He's the one who gives power to the faint. He's the one who gives might, who increases strength. He's the one that does that. So friends, when we're weary, what we need to do is wait on God. Let me just tell you three things about God as we close. Number one, the reason you need to wait on God is because God is, I mean, he's so powerful that his power is unfathomable. Like, I know you're weak. I know you feel like you're going to stumble and trip and fall because of what you're going through in life. I know that. But wait on God. Depend on God. Because God's power is unfathomable. I mean, you can't even measure. He's so strong, you can't even measure it. And that's what I love about verse number 26. Verse number 26, it says, "He lift up your eyes on high, see who created these things, he who brings out their host by number, calling them all by name, by the greatness of his might, because he is strong in power." I mean, think about that. He has unfathomable power. He's actually able to take the stars of the heavens, like sheep before a shepherd or soldiers before a general. God can take the stars of heaven and command them wherever he wishes. I was just trying to think about, like, what would this be like? You have God, and you can almost picture it. You, Alpha Centauri, rise, and it would move. I would just pause for a minute and think about that. You, Cancri, Struve, Aquari, these are all names of stars near us. You, rise, and they would move. That is amazing power. I was trying to just think, like, because this verse right here is saying that he knows these hosts. He brings out the hosts by number. He moves them. He calls them by name. He holds them by his power and his might. Do you know how much power is bound up in one star? When we think power on earth, I mean, some of the big displays of power, like think about an atom bomb. And they have some film footage of these atom bomb going off. It was called Little Boy, the one in Hiroshima. Little boy, do you realize that the total energy output of the sun is one star, this total energy output of the sun for 1 second, one star for 1 second, this is how many times greater the energy is than the atomic bomb, little boy. It is more than, this many times more, 6,126,984,126,984 times as great as that atomic bomb for just 1 second of output of one star. And there's billions of them, and he has control of all of them. I mean, that's just one little illustration of God's power. Like, how big is God's power? Well, how big is the power of an atom bomb? Well, for 1 second, one of those stars that God controls all the billions of them is like 6 trillion times more powerful, just one star for 1 second, and he has billions of them at his control, and he says, rise, and they move. And sometimes here we are, and we're like stumbling and bumbling and tripping and falling underneath the weight of our trials in life. And God says, remember me. Hello? Remember me? I give strength to the faint and power to the weary. He has unfathomable power. Wait on God. Not only that, but his power is unfathomable, but his realm is unbounded. Literally, what he controls, there's no limits to his control, his sovereign superintention over all things. And what he does to prove that to us is in verse number 12, he just shows us some things that are like massive to us, but manageable to him. And he just brings us back to creation. Brings us back to creation. When we feel dwarfed by creation, God dwarfs creation. Verse number 12. Who's measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, marked off the heavens with a span, enclosed the dust of the earth in a measure, weighed the mountains in scales, the hills in a balance? Who's done that? I mean, think about that. What seems so massive to us, Mount Olympus, Mount Everest, he could put them on a scale and weigh their weight. What seems huge to us, we can't even see the end of the Pacific Ocean. We're standing on the beach, and he could scoop it up and hold it in the palm of his hand. I mean, talk about amazing. We look at the stars at night, and they're more than we can even count, and he measured the heavens with the span of his hand. I mean, he has unbounded realms that he controls. He's king over all of this. When you get to verse 22 and 23, it says this, he sits, meaning sits enthroned. He sits above the circle of the earth, and the inhabitants are like grasshoppers. God's realm is unbounded. What does it mean? Well, it means the kings and the presidents and the dictators and the prime ministers and the tribal chiefs and the warlords all reside under his sovereign rule. So we're struggling in life, and we need to remember he has power that's unfathomable, a realm that's unbounded, and lastly, he has wisdom that's unlimited. I love verse number 28. Look at Isaiah 40, 28, right at the end of the verse. Isaiah 40, 28. His understanding is unsearchable. Go back to verse number 13. Who has measured the Spirit of the Lord? What man shows him counsel? Whom did he consult? Who made him understand? Who taught him the path of justice? Who taught him knowledge? Who showed him the way of understanding? I mean, who went to God and gave him a lesson? What person can stand and say, oh yeah, I'm God's advisor. I let him know which way he should go. Who does that? It's interesting, you know, we're in an election year and Tuesday, November 8th, we're going to vote in a new president. And you can imagine what it would be like for this president to take office. And here he is, and he finds his place in the Oval Office and settles himself into that seat. And he says, now, I know the Attorney General has been established since 1789, but that was for dimwit presidents who went before me. I don't need an Attorney General. And then he goes on, I know we've had Secretaries of Defense, and traditionally they leave the DOD, but I don't need any military advice. And I don't want a Secretary of State, and I don't need any international relations help. I don't need a Secretary of Energy, a Secretary of Education, a Secretary of Treasury, a Secretary of Labor, Commerce, Transportation, Agriculture. I don't need all those. I know it all. You would think, whoops, I just elected the wrong person. You know, yeah, that's what you think. I mean, what kind of pride and arrogance would ever be able to take just those topics and say, oh, I don't need any advice. I've got it all. Well, if it was any human person, that would be arrogance and conceit. It would be the height of idiocy. However, when it comes to God, he needs no advisors. He needs no counselors. He needs no cabinet. Who taught him anything? He can't be. He knows it all. He has all wisdom, unlimited wisdom. That is your God. And so you have questions in life and you're struggling with what to do next and where do I go and I feel so pressured and what does the future hold? And go to the God who has this sort of wisdom. Go to this God who has the height of knowledge, who knows all things. His wisdom is unlimited. And so the point of this passage, when we get to the end of it, the point of the passage is this. I know you're weary in life. I know trials and pressures are hard. I know. But don't run to people. Don't run to nature. Don't run to idols. Run to God. Wait on God, whose power is unfathomable, whose realm is unbounded, whose wisdom is unlimited. My friends, when you're weary, you need to wait on the Lord. Because if you'll wait on the Lord, like even this morning, if you'll, remember, lean into that rope. If you will lean into the rope, the Lord, if you will wait on the Lord, then what he's willing to do is exchange weakness for strength. He'll change stumbling into soaring. I know the weights of life are hard, and I know you're collapsing under pain, and I know you're struggling through difficulty, but if you wait on the Lord, trust in him, put faith in him, then he will pile on fresh strength. That's what the passage says. They who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They'll mount up with wings like eagles, run and not grow weary, walk and not faint. My friends, don't waste your wait. Wait on the Lord. Let's pray.